Welcome, everybody. It's time for your weekly chat with the Pilgrim on the 405. The one man wandering up and down the freeways of California in search of the latest techniques and technologies in the strange new frontier of 21st century sales. So here he is, your own personal guide through this confusing world. The one, the only professional sales trainer, Will Crist.
Well, welcome to a nice rainy afternoon in Laguna Beach. Pilgrim on the 405 with Pilgrim Talks. You know, walking up and down, driving up and down, and sometimes in rainy days like this, skittering up and down the 405, lots of different, very interesting people pop up. Visiting in offices, getting to know people, recalling old friends. And you know, I always like to bring interesting, creative people who can help your business to the show. And today we're going to be talking with a very interesting fellow. Now, can you imagine someone who is a CEO of a wireless intellectual property company that's going to dramatically change the way that we use wireless connection devices? A managing director of a company that holds prime real estate in Panama. Managing director of an independent film distribution company, and a company that develops, markets, and sells anti-aging projects where he serves as a CEO. Now, Hank Adamany is a partner in the service group and fund with his partner Phil Hirsch. Now, they were at a little company called PricewaterhouseCooper and Deloitte for many years together. Now, Hank, along the way, was the CEO of a services company. He was a general manager and vice president of a $700 million technology business and a partner and global leader of a consulting practice of more than 1,200 consultants. Now, Hank's managed large multinational businesses and created a technology startup that became profitable in its first 6 months. Created and built six businesses in a variety of industries, ranging in size from $25 million to over $450 million. Hank Adamany is a very interesting fellow, and the service group and fund is dedicated to helping businesses find underutilized, undiscovered, hidden assets to help carry them to the next level. We're going to have a great conversation today about all sorts of ways of helping businesses discover, utilize, and make hay while the sun shines using what they already have. So welcome to Pilgrim Talks, Hank.
It's good to be here, Will.
Well, tell me a little bit about this is a fascinating history. How did you pack all this in?
It was one of those things I'd like to tell you. It was according to plan, but one day I woke up and there it was. Just kind of going through some natural progressions. I've always liked to build businesses, build things, and no matter where I went, whether I told or it was discovered, that's what I ended up doing in all of those organizations, is building.
Well, tell us a little bit about, there must be some secret sauce that you use to build businesses.
Well, there's really never secret sauce, but I will say this. I learned the hard way, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners will relate to this. Without a good management team, you can't succeed. I don't care how good your strategy is. It's the management team that has to execute the strategy. There are more successful average strategies than there are great strategies trying to be executed by a poor team.
Well, so was that the secret sauce? I mean, and every time did you what did you do? Come in and bring your team with you to help?
No, in almost every case, with some modest exceptions, because these are such diverse industries, and I certainly don't, proclaim to have expertise in all of them. Although you do gain some expertise working in them, you have to. The secret is trying to find people who are motivated and capable. You know, it sounds trite, but it's true. Sometimes, my hard lesson was this. In one of my situations, I came in and inherited a whole staff, a whole organization. And my commitment was to try to make that work. After a year and a lot of disasters, we started replacing the people with the people that could do the job. You know, obviously, if something is not succeeding, and you try to take the same team and make it succeed, there's probably more of a challenge there than finding people who can succeed.
Mm-hmm. So, talk to me a little bit about what it is when you come in and you begin to help a company look at these undiscovered assets.
Mm-hmm.
What is that? What's that like?
Well, you know, let's take what's happened the last 2 years as a great example. Companies either don't have or are very suspect about investing a lot of cash in new ventures or new opportunities. Often, and I find this true almost across the board, companies tend to be very inbred and often don't bring in fresh thinking. And it's not so much you need to be a genius or smart. You just need to have been in other industries and see how other people do things and then be able to apply that to your situation. Let me give you an example of a company that I visited about almost a year and a half ago. They are a maker of circuit board scrubbers, and there are two different kinds of circuit board scrubbers. There's the mass-produced circuit boards that can be literally, I mean, I say this facetiously, but hosed off, and you want to be able to do hundreds of thousands in an hour because the failure rate's not that expensive. If you have a failure and it gets put into a device, you can throw a device away and move on. Well, this particular company served a marketplace that had very, very costly failure rates. For example, the defense industry, space launch products, anything that has a lot of value to it. So while the circuit boards still needed to be cleaned, they had to be done in such a way that you didn't damage any of the substrate already on them or any of the components on them. This company had grown very rapidly for its first 10 years of existence to the point now where it had 90% of the U.S. market and about 30% of the global market. And the natural inclination was to go and start looking outside the U.S. because there was 70% there that they didn't have, and they totally ignored what they had in the U.S. And it was pretty clear when you looked at their products. I mean, they provided the bulk of the service parts. They provided the bulk of the service or through contracted third parties. But one interesting thing, they offered an optional service contract. These were very lucrative for them. So after conversation with the owner, who is also the president and CEO, you know, I said, well, the first thing I would do is I would take all of my service contracts and bundle them in my new sales and make them mandatory purchases and then make them mandatory to maintain the warranty. And he looked at me like, we can't do that. A month later, he decided that was a great way to start looking for revenue, did that, got no pushback. He increased his revenues 20% in the U.S., in that first year. The impact was phenomenal. You know, he still calls me about once every quarter just to thank me for that little sage piece of advice. And, you know, it wasn't like this was genius. This is something that you see a lot of companies do. And when you command a monopoly, as long as you're not, you know, gouging, and which he never did, he was very, he delivered a lot of value for what he charged people. And he had no problem bringing that on. It was a great opportunity for him, and he increased revenues. And that those revenues fell right to the bottom line, by the way.
So what you helped him to do is to see what he was doing with a different set of eyes.
Yes, and I guess I have to say an experienced set of eyes that comes with that gray hair. You know how that is.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. But nevertheless, it's a different set of eyes. I mean,
that's correct.
He was, if I could guess, he was probably looking at how he could increase his revenues or reduce his cost within his current way of doing business.
Well, he was very focused in the U.S. on cost reduction and very focused on gaining market share outside the U.S. Now, the cost reduction in the U.S. had a limited amount of opportunity for him. It certainly didn't increase top line. It only increased bottom line. But the outside, the gaining market share outside the U.S., there was a very heavy price to pay for each dollar of market share that he acquired. Now, once you acquired it, you got to keep it unless unless they had a major breakdown, which historically he's never had.
Mm-hmm.
So the real trick was, okay, let's mine what we have. Because those people were paying somebody to do this, and some of them actually even bought service contracts or are calling more insurance policies from third parties.
Huh. All right. So that's something that you helped him to see in a new way.
Correct.
All right. So I'm hearing. Look at the business through new eyes.
Absolutely. It's especially in today's environment where mistakes not only are costly, but they rob you of precious capital or other assets. And most companies just don't have that capital just laying around to be misused.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a very important thing and relatively cost effective. I mean, you're going to have to pay somebody to bring those eyes in,
mm-hmm.
but generally the payoff is, multiple digits to one.
Okay. All right. New eyes don't cost that much.
Compared to other investments, that's correct.
And generally, you're not buying these new eyes. You're not putting these people on as employees. You're generally renting them, right? These are generally asking people to come in, take a look at the business through their eyes.
And there are people
to help you understand it.
That's correct. And there are people who will look at it, and I hate to use this term, a contingency, for example, whereas they'll share an upside with you. So they'll come in at their own expense. They will give you the ideas, help you execute them, and you just end up having to pay whatever you negotiate with them and on the upside of where you were.
Uh-huh. Okay. All right. So there's ways of renting new eyes with the idea that if the ideas that these new eyes can bring you pan out, begin to produce revenue at a margin, then you share that.
Exactly.
So share newfound money.
Let me give you another example, a little different industry, to show you how it applies across the board, if that's okay.
Sure.
Financial services. There's a company, Will, I know you're familiar with them, as am I, who primarily services clients by selling financial products. Now, I'm not talking about stocks and bonds. I'm talking about various products, annuities, life insurance, the list goes on. And what their typical business model, and it served them well over years, was to, react to the new portfolio of products that are being introduced by the large financial services company and go out and try to sell these products to their clients. And I just, when I was asked to look at their business, I just found that to be a very counterproductive model, because you're not necessarily providing your customer, in this case your client, with something that they need and solves a purpose, but you're out there selling a product because it's the latest thing you have, whether it's right for them or not.
Mm-hmm.
So this company had 25,000 existing customers, most of them active, but they had stagnated their revenue growth. Their top line was not growing at all. Costs of getting new clients were very expensive for them. They did all the things that you see these companies typically do. They go out and they hire cold callers, lead generators, the whole bit. And they were paying dearly for these leads. And one one out of five might have panned out, and there's, it's not like you know what the sale is going to be. The sale could be very small. In most cases, not necessarily providing the kind of payback when you consider all of those sale, all of those leads that didn't pan out. You didn't get the kind of payback that you'd look forward for that kind of investment. So one of the things when we started looking at, I said, well, look, you have this 25,000 or so clients. Can't you segregate these clients into like an ABCD model? And, you know, they right away said that was a great idea, and they went and segregated them by the amount of revenue they were generating. I says, no, that's not the way you need to segregate them. You need to look at these clients by their potential or what they're totally spending, whether they're spending it with you or not. And, well, we don't have that information was my was the response. And I said, well, why don't you take a cut at it, and let's find those clients that meet, that we put together some criteria. And they use this criteria to be factors for their potential to spend. You know, for example, do they own a business? Was there a family? There were a number of things, zip code, where they lived, and all of that. And all of those things became, you know, just ways to determine what they could potentially spend. Then I said, okay, let's take that top set of clients and let's figure out how to get put together a strategic plan for them that that ensures their financial well-being. And who cares about the products we have? Well, we don't have that information. So we laid out, one of their top performers and I laid out a program that allowed him to go out and meet with these people. And he already had relationships with the most of these people because they were the right people to have relationships with. And he was able then, once he asked these questions, he was surprised at how they opened up to him and the kind of information they were willing to share with him. And the reason they were willing to do that is because they would benefit from this as much as he would. They would get, you know, potentially financial security instead of somebody knocking on the door saying, hey, this is the hot new product of the month or the hot new stock of the month. And he was able to, we did a group of 20 clients, and we built this plan for them. And the revenue, I mean, let's talk from the business perspective now. The clients were all very satisfied. They liked what they were seeing. They liked the clients, the agents' willingness to understand their business, their needs, their issues, and help them fulfill their dreams. But the bottom line to the business was they increased their revenues out of that client base threefold of what they had in the previous year. And that was only the beginning because they could continue to mine even those same people because we laid out a plan that showed they would need these instruments at these points in time. And it turned out to be just a win-win for everybody. And, you know, I'm not going to sit here and tell you these were all my brilliant ideas. I just provided the eyes to look at things a little differently, and they then executed pretty effectively against that.
All right, so let's see what we did here. We helped them move from selling a product or a service to identifying needs of customers.
I would say a little differently, Will. It's more, yeah. In this case, it was more of understanding and helping them build a strategy to get to the end game that the people had for themselves. Whether it be, I want to retire at 40 and own my own island, to I want to make sure all my kids go to college and have it better than I did and be able to have a little nest egg for each one of them so they get a start, you know, a kickoff into the world. I mean, in a lot of cases, the goals may have been more modest than you would expect, but now they had somebody working with them to do them.
All right, so move from selling a product or service to understanding the goals, hopes, and dreams of customers, and then designing a way to accomplish that.
Absolutely.
Okay, so that's pretty significant. So, in effect, I don't know, did you do all 25,000?
No, that's why we stratified. They finally got, after we went through this whole process, they understood why we wanted to stratify, and I wanted them to focus on the top 10% only.
Oh, okay. So did they do all 2,500?
No, they're still working them. I mean, this is a process that's going to take years.
Okay. All right. So they moved from selling a product or service to understanding the goals, hopes, and dreams of the top 10% of their customers and designing a plan to satisfy those goals, to accomplish those goals.
Correct.
All right. And do you have any idea what additional revenue that has generated?
No, it's huge. They tripled the revenue out of that top 10%, the ones that they and they projected that over the next 5 years, it'll be 100% growth.
Oof. Well, now, if they tripled it, that...
I'm sorry, 10 times growth, not 100%, 10 times.
Oh, 1,000%.
Yeah, I'm sorry. My bad.
Wow. 1,000% growth. That's amazing. Just sitting there in those 25,000 people, in those 2,500 people.
Correct.
And going out to, you could have identified those 2,500 top customers and going out to sell them more products or more services.
And well, you could have done that, but I don't think they'd have been as successful.
Yeah. Yeah. Versus retraining, rethinking, changing what I am doing to what I'm really doing is looking to see how I can help that customer achieve their dreams.
Isn't that the bottom line? When you identify with the customer, you usually are able to, I hate to use the word make the sale, because you're actually helping them achieve what they want to achieve. So it's a win-win.
So this is a company that historically has sold insurance policies and annuities, right?
Among other products too, but yes, those are the types.
And so I can't imagine going to the top 2,500 of your customers and saying, I know you've got lots of insurance now because you're in the top 2,500. I want to sell you a little bit more.
Exactly.
On the other hand, I'll bet you they are, well, they've got to be selling them a lot more.
Well, and with what happened in the last 2 years in the marketplace, people are much more receptive to alternative guaranteed products versus rolling the dice. You know, we got spoiled with the tech bubble and all the other bubbles. We all expected 25% annual returns, and we thought, you know, no matter how smart or how stupid we were, we'd get them.
Well, you mean you're telling me you're not getting 25% returns right now?
Of course I am.
So, now, then understanding exactly what a customer wants, and then designing a plan using my products and services that will help them accomplish that, that to me is genius. I mean, that sounds like a whole change in the way that we're doing business here.
There's no question. For them, it was an entire paradigm shift. And fortunately for me, I worked with an agent who really got it, and probably thought that way, but didn't know how to execute that way until we got together.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So we've got two examples of
finding... Actually, I have a third one for you, entirely different.
All right. Good.
Okay, this one's a little more interesting. This is a company that made marine electronics equipment. And this company came out with a new device that was kind of a market breaker, reduced price substantially and changed the paradigm. It was a device that could be used either as a man overboard when attached to a person, or when it's attached to a boat, it became an active radar reflector. What that means is when you have a boat that's too small to reflect the radar, either that's land-based or water-based, this device makes you look like a ocean liner and keeps you from getting run over. Kayakers love it. Smaller sailboats and powerboats love it. Anyway, they had the misfortune of launching this product in early 2008 and watched the recreational boating market crumble around them, that dropped between 50 and 90% depending upon which country you were in, and it was devastating, because we all know when recessions hit, the first thing to go are the toys. And for most people, in this case, the recreational boating market, those are all toys.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this company they invested the store, the bank, in this latest device, and it was either get some sales or go under. They really had no alternative, or get a huge cash infusion from all the principals. So we started looking around at we have a device in search of a market, and lo and behold, we stumbled, fumbled, and bumbled. I say that figuratively. We actually were directed to an area called Homeland Security. And we find that the mixed-use ports around the world, and especially in the U.S., mixed-use meaning commercial and recreational, and in some cases naval, these were just nightmares for the Homeland Security people. While there are restricted areas in these ports, there is major discomfort that a small boat, a rowboat, a canoe, I'm being a little facetious here, but a small boat packed with C4 could do some real serious damage, whether it be to a loading facility like we see in Long Beach or over in San Pedro, or for more importantly, for all the petroleum facilities, or even the naval shipyards. Now,
well, like the coal, huh?
Yeah, exactly. It's exactly right.
Yeah.
So they were looking for devices, Homeland Security was, to be able to monitor the recreational boats. And let's use a simple example. The Port of Long Beach probably has somewhere in the neighborhood of 10,000 boats registered into that port, recreational boats, and another 25,000 that get towed and people launch from that area. But the primary interest in this case was if you called the Port of Long Beach home and you were a recreational user, you were not going to be permitted to move your boat unless the Coast Guard and or any of the other monitoring facilities knew that you were a friendly ship. Now, the commercial vessels use a system called AIS. AIS is a user-programmable transmission that goes out on X-band radar, which is what all the radar devices that are in the ports use. Now, these X-band devices are, when it hits your ship, and you're a big commercial ship, the AIS system triggers and sends a message telling them who you are, your port of registry, the whole host of information. And it transmits all that information. Well, those systems, at a minimum, are about $3,500 a pop, and there was no way you're going to get a recreational user to put those systems on their boat. And more importantly, the smaller boats, this would be the weight of a person, potentially, in comparison, and they had no interest in that. So one of the things that we did was we had the ability, we being the Marine Electronics Company, in their device, the way it was built, it could transmit a unique identifier. So let's take the Port of Long Beach again. So you say of these 10,000 boats that are primarily, that call this port home, the port would buy one of these devices, it would have a unique identifier, and it would just be like licensing your car. Once you got the device, you provided them with the type of craft you had, your name, all the pertinent information. And then when you got in your boat, what you did is when the radar hit this device, it would send back this code. And they have cameras in most of the locations, so they would bring up the database for this code, and it would say a 30-foot sloop owned by John Smith. It's docked in berth 7192, blah, blah, blah. And they put the camera on it, and if it was exactly that, they didn't do anything else. That created a level of comfort. Now, if a boat came, if they saw a recreational boat that didn't have, the camera showed a boat and it didn't have, it wasn't shooting a device, they'd send a boat out, a Coast Guard boat, to check this boat out. Now, today what they do is either they do nothing, or if a boat comes anywhere near a restricted area and it's not a commercial or a naval vessel, they send the Coast Guard out. Even if they're not in the restricted area but close to it, they have to do this. It's very costly. So these devices cost the government about $175. It used all the existing equipment they already had, just required some small programming, and it was a solution that they had total control over, and they loved it. Now, as it turns out, all of these ports that would use this solution, that market tends to be substantially larger than the recreational market that they were looking for to begin with. So this became a whole switch of market using the same device, basically.
All right. Now help me to understand. This is it wasn't as easy to come in and simply have a new set of eyes. So what was this? How did this happen? I mean, somebody came in, saw the problem. How did the solution come up?
I'm sorry, Will, last thing you said?
How did the solution come about?
Well, it was what I said to you is they had made the investment and then found that the situation around it dramatically changed. So they didn't even think about looking at outside the recreational market, and they got very nervous about this. And what we did is we came and we said, look, let's look at the attributes of your solution, and let's see if we can find other potential markets for it that aren't the recreational market. Mm-hmm. And part of our search, we found that there was this RFP going out for this very need, and knowing enough about the device and its attributes, we went back to the engineers and asked if we could make the switch and actually perform this by sending out a unique identifier. And it turned out to be, didn't even require any change in the components. It just required programming on the device. And it was pretty, so here what forced this was a little different. I mean, this company was going to go under if they didn't find a market for this major investment they'd made. And they'd made a major breakthrough. I'll give you an example. They're producing a product that could be sold for a little less than actually it was close to a third of what all the competing products were out there, because the technology change that they made removed some very costly components that were in excess of $100. So they had a good concept, and in a normal times they would have had a home run in the recreational market, but with the recreational market going down, then it became a search. Okay, I have these attributes. Where else do these attributes work? And we told them we wanted to look at counter-cyclical. Well, Homeland Security is not only counter-cyclical, they just spend, spend, and spend. You know that.
All right, so then what we're learning from this, or we might be learning from this, very often I hear in working with sales managers and owners of companies, well, what I'm hiring salespeople or marketing people, I want them to have a lot of experience in my industry. I want them to be in my industry, have lots of experience in my industry. Well, what I'm hearing here is that in this particular case, it was pretty valuable for somebody to be able outside their industry.
Well, it's I wouldn't even put this on the salespeople in this case. this is a management kind of an issue. I mean, yes, you have sales guys that are focused in the industry that they were in, but there is no industry anymore. I mean, I'm saying that, I don't mean that literally, but figuratively, it had dried up so much. So now we had to take and say, okay, what are the key attributes of this product, of what we have, of this technology, and do a match against other potential markets. And then, you know, that's a whole different, as you started to say, that's a whole different sales skill dealing with the Homeland Security versus the recreational boating market.
Fair enough, but let's tweak this a little bit. Let's suppose that we didn't have a recreational boat collapse.
Yes.
They sold their product in recreational boats, right?
Yep.
And people could have chosen to use it for, you know, man overboard protection, or perhaps they wanted to be able to avoid a big boat running over them.
Yep.
Now, at the same time, if they had wanted to, they could have been looking around with the same passion and vigor for other marketplaces. And
no question. You're absolutely right.
All right. So what I'm learning from this is you don't have to be at death's door to look outside your marketplace.
Well, and you're absolutely right, Will, but I would say this to you. When you have limited resources, do you want to spread those thin across multiple marketplaces, or do you want to take what you think is the best bet at the time and try to capitalize that one? I mean, that's not a question that has an answer the same every time you look at it, but I'm just saying you really need to make sure that when you do attack a marketplace and you feel it's the right marketplace, that you can invest the right amount of resource to get a return.
All I'm saying is that there's something that happened here at death's door for these people, for this particular company.
Yes.
And they wound up with a huge undiscovered marketplace that they discovered. They broke through to a whole other room in this world that they could market to.
Okay, and I agree.
And I'm presuming this was fairly lucrative for them.
Oh, it's very lucrative.
All right. Had they only looked at the recreational boat world, they could have completely ignored this possibility.
All
I'm suggesting is that part of what we're talking about today is where are the undiscovered assets of my company? This is a whole undiscovered asset. Now, in this particular story, it took death's door for them to break through to another marketplace. There was nothing, I presume that there was nothing to keep them from investing something in looking around at other marketplaces for their existing product, even while if they were able to sell it into the recreational boat world.
Okay.
So one of the things I'm concluding from this is, you know, we've got several things here. Look at the business through new eyes. Number two is move from selling a product or service to understanding the goals, hopes, and dreams of customers and designing a plan to accomplish those goals. And now what I'm hearing is maybe a third one is look around at other underused, other marketplaces where my particular solution might fit.
No, I think you've summarized them well.
Okay. All right. So, and these are places of undiscovered wealth. These are places where that gold is sitting in my company, and I haven't even begun to tap it.
Yes.
Or now, I could be bringing in lots of money right now. I could be saying, okay, so I want to double my revenue, so I'm going to double my current sales force, which has its own problems, infrastructure, management. Or I could be saying, I wonder if I were to have somebody with new eyes come in and look at my company and see what they could discover. I wonder if I could take the top 25, the top 10% of my current customers, and go listen to them and find out what particular dreams, hopes, and needs they have right now to see if I could come at their solving those in a whole different way. Or maybe I spend a little money, not marketing in my current market, but spending some money to look around, probe around to find out if there are indeed other equally lucrative markets or even more lucrative markets that I could get into using my current, this was their current product. They didn't have to go redesign their complete redesign of their product.
No, it was just a simple software adjustment.
Okay. So I'm seeing three places where any company in Orange County right now could benefit from looking at this.
No question.
These are small investments, right?
Yes, sir.
The return for the circuit board company was how much?
The cleaners.
Yes.
Yeah, they got 20% top line right to the bottom line in the first year off of existing revenue.
And they were doing fairly well.
They were doing extremely well, but they started plateauing, as I told you, because they had 90% of the U.S.
All right. So they had a very good return on this. What did it mean? We changed one paragraph in our contract, in our agreement?
And collect a lot more money. Yes, sir.
I mean, that's a pretty good return. We might have to throw out, the print run of our contracts, unless we only print them up when we, you know, from a Word document, right? So,
right.
I mean, like that, there's no investment for that.
It was almost non-existent. Correct.
Non-existent. I mean, other than the huge check that they cut for you, right?
Exactly.
So back to non-existent. but they got a 20% return on that by simply having some new eyes come and look. All right. And secondly, with the financial services company. Now let's ask about the investment that they had to make to get this 1,000% increase. What did they have to do?
They had a little bit more of an investment, I'm not necessarily always talking about financial. This was a leap of faith and a new way of looking at their business that they never looked at before.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, there was an investment of courage. I don't mean that to sound trite, but it was. I mean, it was a major change for them.
There
were naysayers, including the senior management, who didn't think that this would make any sense at all.
Fair enough, and they probably did a beta test.
We took 10, as I mentioned, 10 customers. And
okay, all right. And what did that cost?
I almost would put it to you this way. There were no incremental costs over what they would have spent otherwise to call on these people.
All right, and they got back an incremental increase. They made sales where otherwise it would have been highly resistant to buying more insurance, another annuity.
Yeah, and more importantly, they mapped out all future products. Now, granted, you have to revisit this plan periodically, whether it's annually or biannually. But they had mapped out. They had mapped out all of this stuff. And laid it out for everyone over a period of time.
Yeah, all right, but now when they had laid that out and said, of course, now we're going to have to come back to you, Mr. Customer, and review this 6 months, a year from now to see how it works and may have to do a little tweaking on this.
Well, and it's a little bit different in this case. Let me just interrupt you for 1 second, Will.
Sure.
They did was, okay, here's your goals. Here's what we're going to do today. And here's how we're going to move this 4 years from today, and why, and you lay it out, and you're sitting there with the clients, and they look at you and they go, yes, that's exactly what I want to do. This is how we want this to go. So, mm-hmm. Whether it's 4 years or 6 months or whatever it is, the time frame that's required, they're expecting you to do this on their behalf. Now, clearly, yes. You go back out there and you say, here's what we're doing, as we agreed, and they look at you, yep, we agreed to do that, boom, let's move forward. Our plans haven't changed.
I mean, it is now, for most insurance salespeople, once they make that sale and they start clipping their coupons with their premiums every year or every month, how much customer service are they going to give?
No, they will. I mean, part of this was to stay close to these people. I mean, these are your top 10%. These are the people that probably are going to end up spending 80 to 90% of the dollars in the company.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to invest appropriately. And that means you can contact them and you deal with them and you stay intimate with with their life changes and make sure they're following plan.
All right. And so all I'm saying is that that wasn't a huge redeployment of dollars. It was a redeployment of ideas, strategies, processes, and it was taken in small incremental bites to make sure that it worked first, and then now it's progressing to the top 2,500 clients, and they expect over the next 10 years a 1,000% increase.
That's correct.
And all I'm suggesting is that to move forward out of this fog that's maybe dissipating a little bit, but this recent late unpleasantness, as we used to talk about in the South, as we move out of that, it doesn't necessarily require huge investments of time, money, or resources. It requires some creativity, some new eyes, different possibilities, and maybe looking into a totally different market to find out what their needs are and how might we tweak our current products or services to meet those needs. It just seems to me that, Hank, that what you're talking about is certainly creative. It does take courage. There are risks. But the costs associated with it are minuscule for huge returns.
Generally, I agree with you. And there could be exceptions to that, but the three examples I gave you, you hit on the head.
All right. So what would we suggest if we were talking today to, 100 CEOs, business owners, what would we suggest that they do in the next 90 days in their company?
Well, I think the easiest thing and the least costly thing is find a source you trust who isn't intimate with your business and who has had variety of experiences, and let them come in and sit with you and see if they can generate some ideas that you think are worthy of pursuing.
All right, so find a new set of experienced eyes who are not currently in the box of your business.
Absolutely.
All right, that would be one. Number two?
Listen with a different set of ears, because most people react to people that don't know their business as, you can't possibly know what I'm going through. So, the onus is back on you, Mr. CEO. Are you willing to look at yourself differently, and you're willing to listen with ears you not would probably not normally use? And that's much harder than finding A is accomplishing B.
All right, so listening to it with a different set of ears to my current customers.
Well, listen to it. Yeah, I mean, the same thing that if you go out and if you do a current customer search, you're out there to find out why they like you or don't like you, what should you be doing differently or better. But now you're asking somebody who doesn't have any experience with your company but has multiple experiences with other companies, and the right kind of person will be able to synthesize after a quick understanding of your business, and they won't have the hemorrhages that you have had from failures, from anything else that causes you to naysay, we can't do that. We've tried that before. And my point is, if you go in with that attitude, don't waste that person's time or yours. You must have a different set of ears.
All right. And what I'm tying back to this financial services company is listen with a different set of ears to my current customers for their hopes, dreams, and which may not fit with how I've been selling them in the past.
Absolutely.
So new set of eyes, different set of ears, and I'm going to suggest that the third thing is walk in different paths.
You could say it that way. I agree with that.
Walk in different paths, which is what they did. Walk right into Homeland Security RFP, right?
Yes, sir.
So we've got find a new set of experienced eyes that are not currently involved with the company. Listen with a different set of ears to the best of my current customers, and then walk in different paths.
Well, no, listen with a different set of ears to this person who comes in, too.
Okay.
I mean, I may get invited in, mm-hmm. but, you know, the first thing they ask you is, what do you know about my business? And even if I know about their business, I tell them nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I say, I know nothing about your business. Because I don't have the jaundice that they have. I don't have the rose-colored or the black-colored glasses on. I have nothing. I have no investment in their company. I'm mm-hmm. just here to look at and give you some ideas, because I've seen other companies do this, or it makes sense based upon your current predicament to try this, blah, 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 that kind of stuff. I find that I will meet some executives who don't want to. Once I tell them I have no experience in their industry, they don't want to talk to me. That's fine.
Oh, I know.
We can be done.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's what I'm saying, is that sometimes a company or a CEO or a leader, a sales leader, limits themselves by saying, I only want salespeople or marketing people who've had lots of experience exclusively in my industry.
Correct.
So, all right. And then so walk in different paths. Those are three things that people can do if they spent 5% of their week for 90 days, 3 months, 12 weeks doing those three things. They have the opportunity to find enormous gold that's sitting underneath the shelf, sitting in a closet, right across the street. Would
yep,
you agree?
I agree.
All right. All right. So if somebody wanted to talk to you more, Hank, what would they do? How would they get in touch with you?
Well, the easiest way is just to send me an email to the service group. And that, you want me to give them the email address?
Absolutely.
It's HADAMANY. It's H, my first initial, my first name, my last name, Adamany, H Adamany, at CERVUSgroup.com, servicegroup.com. And, you know, I'd be happy to talk to any of your listeners with no strings attached. And, you know, if there's something they want to ask or something I can help them with, or they want me to come out and have lunch with them, whatever it is, happy to do that.
Look with new eyes, listen with new ears, and help them to walk in different paths, huh?
I like it.
Well, that's great. We've been talking with Hank Adamany, one of the most creative people, one of the more creative people we have in Orange County, who walks with, you know, huge companies, small companies, startup companies, companies that are faltering, companies at the death door, and helps them to find new places where revenue can come in, find underused, undiscovered assets to put them in place. Not only to help the companies grow, but also to help serve the customers who would otherwise be losing. To say nothing of keeping people in jobs and helping them to stay employed. Hank, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to be with us. And I look forward to lots of times when maybe you can help me look at my world through new eyes, or listen to what's going on in my world with new ears, or even help me to walk in different paths.
Will I be happy to? You know that.
Great. So much. Thank you so much, Hank, for being with me. I look forward to being with you shortly.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Will.
Great. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Well, there you have it. We have some extraordinary talent here in Orange County, and all we have to do is ask. There's not always a big price tag to be paid up front. Sometimes it's just a matter of sitting down and asking, what can I do to increase the revenue of my company? How can I find underused assets? How can I find ways to reduce the costs of doing business here in Orange County? Now, I know there's a lot of whining out there, and sometimes it's justified to, you know, talk about California, the federal government, all of these things that get in the way and distract us from what the real issue is finding creatively how to market what we're doing, to create new ideas, to solve problems, find those solutions for things that our customers out there desperately need to have from us. So many thanks to Hank and others in this county who are continually going around helping us to see with new eyes, hear with new ears, and to walk in different paths. So this is the Pilgrim on the 405. Looking forward to talking with you again next Wednesday afternoon at 5 o'clock. Have a great week. Be careful of the rain.
You've been listening to the one and only Will Chris, the Pilgrim, on the 405, only on octalkradio.net. Stay tuned for the Asian Business Hour coming up next.